law to put down a particular sentence.
And now looking at that, that's when you can point to the Ward Bird case where the judge in his sentencing order said that he wasn't happy with the minimum mandatory, but that's what he had to follow.
That's exactly right. And so there's, and as I've said, there's a million other cases, and some people think, well, you're analogizing all these cases are alike, and my answer is no. Every case is absolutely different with the actions or inactions of the individuals involved. The issue is 652.2G, which there's a million of those cases out there. There's a million people, and I'm not talking literally a million, but many, many of those cases out there where people have been sentenced to minimum mandatories because a firearm was present or alleged to be used or used, when really the intent of the law was to get what I call the real criminals. We're talking the robbers, the rapists, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those people were the target, if you will, of this particular law. And unfortunately, it's really being used as a sword against many people in many situations where the law really wasn't, you know, the original drafters of that law, I don't believe, intended to have it, you know, operate the way it has.
Now, there's a story, and I think I'm a little confused on this one, and that is, wasn't there a proposal in the legislature last year that would make, quote-unquote, showing a firearm not so much a crime if you're using it to deter a threat?
You know, there's been several bills over the years, and they had one that's very, very, very weak that passed. And the problem that people have faced with this is that the chiefs don't want any, and by the chiefs I'm talking about the New Hampshire Chiefs Association, they don't want any discretion being taken away from the police, and I think that's our very problem. We need discretion taken away from the police because we have a lot of these cases that shouldn't have been charged. You know, the county attorneys need to look at why are we charging some of these cases. The chiefs need to look at, and the officers, why are we arresting in these cases? And so there was a very weakened version passed, but it still puts you in what I call, at least in my mind, in jury land. And anything that puts you in jury land is an incredible, incredible expense and risk for the person who's been charged.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the problem in cases like that. You're talking about, you know, if you're the person who's been arrested and arraigned and charged, it's a very scary thing, especially for the average person who's never maybe had a speeding ticket in their whole life. And now they're going through the whole system. It's a very scary, expensive, and, you know, some people lose their jobs over it because their employer says, oh, my God, if you're that type of person, you know, we don't want you around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's all sorts of other risks and traumas that a person endures, you know, being, in many cases, unfairly charged with a variety of, you know, acts.
I gotcha. Now, here's a question. I was watching one of those cop TV shows last night, and they pick up a guy for, you know, car theft, whatever. And, you know, one of the questions they're asking, you know, identify yourself, what's your name, yada, yada, yada. Have you ever been arrested before? And I thought to myself there for a minute, okay, is that a question that I would really have to answer? Because, A, if I was arrested for something, wouldn't they know it anyway? So why is that question even asked? Because just because you were arrested doesn't mean you were guilty of anything.
You know what? They sometimes do that, A, to see if you're going to be truthful with them, and B, to start, it's this what I call eighth grade psychology. It's a game. And I tell people, if you watch the police shows, those techniques the police use, they use because they work on people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so I tell people, watch police shows, and I've had clients of mine who've been arrested, and they have essentially talked to the police when they should have exercised the right to remain silent. And I say, you bonehead, do you watch police shows? They go, yeah, we watch this one and that one and the other on TV at night. I go, those techniques? He goes, yeah, they used them on me. And I go, and they worked. Are you crazy? You know, I said, you've seen these TV shows a million times, but when you're in what I call the hot seat, right,
mm-hmm.
people aren't thinking logically. They're scared, and they think, if I do what the police like, if I tell them the truth, if I tell them whatever, then they'll let me alone because I didn't do anything wrong. And my answer is no, they won't, you know. And I liken it to, you know, once you've peed off your girlfriend or whatever and she's having a bad day, anything you say is going to get you in trouble. Okay, so the best thing to do is shut your mouth. I tell the guys, the girlfriend, you just did something. You said something bad about her hair or her whatever. And after that, it's all going downhill. Okay.
I hear you. Well, 1-866-823-1077 is our phone number here on Second Amendment Tuesdays with Attorney Penny Dean. I want to take a time out here. What do you want to talk about when we come back?
Is your FFL dealer selling you out for $25 or less? Or $50.
Oh, let's talk about this one. Oh, boy. Next, here on Second Amendment Tuesdays on Bulldog Live on the Pulse.
Bulldog Live will continue after these messages, live on the Pulse.